This is Wade Rathke, and you're listening to Wade's World. It's Friday morning, 9 to 9:30 Central Time in the United States, and your time for the voice of the people. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, where KABF 88.3 is located, or the east side of New Orleans, where WAMF 90.3 is housed, or Greenville, Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay. Points east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at www.kabf.org. A podcast will be available of this show on Monday at that website. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world. And today we're in Glasgow, Scotland, talking to Dave Beck, who's a lecturer in community development at the University of Glasgow and one of the co-founders of a very interesting thing called a Radical Learning Network. We're going to find out all about it. Welcome to Wade's World, Dave.
Hi, Wade.
Hi, Wade. So look, what is, let's start. People obviously listening don't know exactly what's happening on community development. They don't know anything about community development in Scotland or the UK. So give us a sense of, is there hope? Is there a lot going on? Give us the broad, tell us what's on the waterfront.
Okay. Well, community development is in some ways quite strong within Scotland. There's quite a lot of support from government for community development as an approach to delivering services, and that gives it a space in public, which is good in some ways and bad in other ways, because as you know, the state has a tendency to incorporate and take over and domesticate.
So for audiences that aren't as familiar, is community development different from economic development? When you say the state's involved, we're talking about social service. Are they contracting out social services to nonprofits, or how does that really work?
Well, community development here would take in elements of economic development, community regeneration, but it would cover things like education, the arts, the environment, and a range of social services as well. So it's quite a broad sweep of activities and services. And
I know one woman asked me about youth programs. Yeah. So that must be part of what's included. Is a lot of that a lot of a community development involved in youth services?
Yeah. Traditionally in Scotland, community development, they tend to call it community learning and development within Scotland, and that would encompass adult education, community development, and youth work. And so the tradition has always been to keep those three strands together, which I think is quite a strength, because it gives a holistic understanding and approach to what's happened across a broad range of community activities.
So what is community education? Is that one of the categories? What you said, three categories?
Adult education. Community development and youth.
And is adult education, that's different than schools, that's for retraining, or what are we talking
well,
about?
It's more kind of informal learning, but it also encompasses things like literacy, increasingly ESOL, English as a second language, and those kind of things. So it fills the space between school and formal learning. So it's anything that's not that is kind of adult education within this.
But not necessarily popular education as we would know it, sort of Barry or Highlander Centre or something like that.
I would say I think that happens more often actually in community development. Certainly the stuff that we teach, and we've taught a lot of people who practice community development in Scotland, and popular education would be at the heart of the approach that we would.
Gotcha.
The kind of foundations of the stuff that we teach are popular education on one side and ideas about community organising on another side. So get people to think and analyse and imagine a different world, and then help them to organise and for change, for power.
So when people come into the University of Glasgow into this program, what are they hoping to end up doing? Are they hoping to be community organizers? Are they hoping to be youth workers? Are they hoping to be...
It's pretty broad. Community organizing per se is not something that is big in the UK tradition. I think it's a real gap, and that's how we teach it, has been something that needs to supplement what we do. But people come in interested in the arts, or interested in the environment, or housing, or health, or these kind of broad range of activities. Community development happens right across the kind of the statutory sector, the voluntary sector, and things like health, housing, all these kind of.
So do many of them go directly to work for the government after the program, or is that not a common employer?
It's less common than it was. I think the more common model is voluntary sector jobs, which are, they're indirectly government jobs because they're broadly funded by
that's
by
the
government.
Funding stream, yeah. You know, it's one hardly an arm's length.
Exactly. They still control.
Well, and is the level of support for community development from government staying the same, going down as we see it in the US and many other countries, increasing in Scotland?
I think it's kind of holding its own.
That's good news.
Yeah, it's good. I think that's good news. I work with colleagues in other parts of the United Kingdom, and they are very much under the caution that there are some local authorities in England where all of the youth services have just been closed. Mm-hmm. That hasn't happened in Scotland. And talking to some local authorities across Scotland, community development and youth work has either been protected or in some cases has been increased recently, which is great news, I think, at this time.
Absolutely. And is that because of devolution, or is that just a different philosophy in the north here in Scotland compared to England?
Yeah, I think it's both. I mean, I think there's more kind of socialist aspirations within Scotland, I wouldn't put it more strongly than that, that supports...
The state has a responsibility.
Yeah.
I think in England, they're coming more towards the United States where the state has no responsibility. That's right. You're on your own. Good luck. Exactly. Dog eat dog. Welcome to America.
Exactly.
And now our English colony here.
Well, England always follows on. The UK always follows on like 10 years after, so...
Well, let's hope Scotland can build a wall or something like a Trump wall.
Yeah, we'll try. Yeah, that's right.
So, well, that's good news. And these programs, I mean, I know housing was something certainly people ask a lot about last night when we were at the university talking. And that's a crisis everywhere in the United Kingdom, but that's also something we see here in Glasgow.
Yeah. I think in terms of the community development stuff, the housing association movement is quite strong here. Some of the housing associations are very good in terms of the community development stuff because they recognise that housing isn't just bricks and mortar,
right,
but it's the whole kind of social fabric. And so... we work quite closely with a number of housing associations who are trying to develop community development approaches to the work that they do, and that makes a big difference to
sure.
how people feel about how they about the places that they live.
Now, obviously, in a lot of Europe, political discussion has to do with immigrants and refugees. I assume that some of these programs in community development are directly impacting on immigration and refugees, or am I on the wrong track?
No, I think that's true. It came probably later than it needed to, because at one point in Glasgow, certainly, immigrants arrived, refugees arrived without any preparation within the local community, and so there's they set up this kind of discord between
sure.
incoming people and the settled community. But that's been addressed to some extent. So there are a number of kind of refugee projects, a number of integration projects and networks that are trying to address some of those difficulties and tensions. And I think there's a what's that program called? Glasgow Ouija's. A kind of grassroots project that's about welcoming, new Scots into.
And what is it called? Don't we refer to people from Glasgow as Glaswegians?
We're called Glaswegians, and this is I can't remember what it's called now. But anyway,
it doesn't really matter. But anyway, there's a welcoming program.
But that is a grassroots community response to saying we want to be, actively a friendly, welcoming place for people who have come, no matter where they come from, and no matter what their circumstances, and that is in kind of distinction to the kind of the media response, which tries to separate and.
Absolutely. We're talking to Dave Beck, who's with the University of Glasgow and some other projects here, about what the state of community development and organizing is in Scotland and maybe even in the United Kingdom. I was in Bristol a couple of days ago with the organizer film, and they showed it in a huge room that was part of a very old settlement house, Barton Hill or something settlement house. And it had housing, it had a Somali center, it had, a dozen programs on a, big complex of buildings. Are settlement houses still common in the UK or Scotland? I mean, we don't see that many anymore in the US.
I don't know that term, settlement houses.
It's like Jane Hull started them in Chicago, a settlement house movement, which is sort of a forerunner to most community organizing.
To
assimilate or try to provide services that were community-based to low-income slums and immigrants coming in.
Community centers, I suppose. It's the closest to that.
Absolutely.
Which is and there's lots of them still across.
That's probably the what they're called here. I mean, that was called a settlement house where we were, but
right, okay.
I mean, so it reminded me of what, because the settlement house movement was very strong in the U.S. after it started in Chicago and in New York, and there's still huge operations in some of the old cities like New York and Chicago, and it jumped over London, and. To some degree, obviously, in Bristol, but community centers are then sort of multi-purpose centers.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's still very common then, or
no? They're strong, and a lot of them would be funded by local authorities, but managed and staffed by
nonprofits.
And volunteers and local people.
Now, are the laws good on nonprofits here? Are they allowed a pretty wide flexibility of operations? Or
I think so. Yeah. Obviously, they can't be political with a big P.
Yeah.
Although what they do is very political, but they can't be partisan.
Uh-huh.
Other than that, I think there's quite a lot of scope for organisations to do what they want to do.
Well, it's good.
Yeah.
That's good. And it's not just a bricks and mortar program, community centers. It's really funding services as
well. Yeah, they're a hub for a whole range of services. So they kind of see themselves as kind of anchor organizations within communities around which a whole range of other things kind of coalesce.
A lot of people confuse the terms community development, community organizing.
Yeah.
You must have to somehow weed through that in your classes as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was interesting. A number of years ago, the Tory government in the UK, David Cameron's government, employed a number of community organisers.
Right.
And so there's
500 or so, whatever. I forget the numbers were, absurd.
It was all very strange. But there was a big backlash amongst community development people in England, particularly, didn't come up to Scotland.
The program didn't involve Scotland at all. It was all just
England. So I did a number of talks around about that time, working with community workers, just to try and get, because there was partly because of the the fact that it was Tory sponsored, but also partly because they didn't really understand the approach. There was a real suspicion from community development people against a community organising approach. And so I spent quite a bit of time trying to work through what are the commonalities, what are the differences, what can we learn from one another, and how can we, you know, enrich one another's traditions, kind of thing. But there was lots of resistances.
Well, I mean, the Cameron government was pretty clear they were funding the program as a band-aid over the fact that they were drastically cutting social services.
Yeah.
And that this was supposed to, you know, embed self-help more deeply into communities around England. So, I mean, there was reasons. I mean, if there had been a union of community organizers or a trade association, they probably should have sued for a different name, you know. But it was one of those things where none of it had to do with building community organizations to empower people or to affect social change. No. It was all about, you know, I mean, I did a couple of trainings about, and some of them were people organizing sewing circles and trash pickups.
Revolutionary.
You know, it was like Breitbart last night talking about he thought community organizing was helping Mrs. McGillicuddy pick up her garbage. Well, that was the community organizing program in England right there. It was helping Mrs. McGillicuddy pick up her garbage. If he'd only moved over here, he would have been a happier man.
Exactly.
May he rest in peace. But that is something you really have to sort out then, is how people understand. And I found that in Bulgaria and Slovakia when I was just there too. I mean, people who were community organizers seemed to be more like what you would see as community workers with a community center, trying to get more participation in local programs.
And that would definitely be the kind of dominant picture here. And I suppose what we're trying to do through our programs is push for an approach that's more informed by community organizing principles. So it's like I pose to my students, okay, how are we building for power?
Right.
How is what you're doing shifting the power balance between, you know, the haves and the have-nots, those sorts of things.
And it's really an intake model, not an out. I mean, community organizing, what I started noticing on this trip, this endless trip, is, you know, community organizing is more of an outreach program.
Yeah.
And where you have that sort of bricks and mortar community center, it's really more intake, how you can get people in to provide the services. So,
but the problem is because so much of community development stuff is funded by the government and has bought into this kind of output driven model. So your project is funded to work with 20 young people to do an IT course or something like that. So it's not in your interest to then go out and
have 100 people trying to get into the doors.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but because there's a lack of kind of critical engagement within the kind of community sector, people just take what they're given rather than questioning it and challenging it and resisting the kind of funding regimes and these output models and these managerial approaches.
I think we're at, I mean, we're drifting away from the island in Scotland, but where it's, you know, was controversial in my view and in places like Slovakia is that they were getting deliberate funding to build community organizations as sort of a firewall against far right, almost neo-Nazi governments, and yet it's not. That's not a firewall if all you're doing is building, you know, dance programs and art classes at a community center in some small village. Yeah. I mean, that there's no connection to
it's marginal to people's actual lives, isn't it?
We visited with some Roma organizers that were part of this program, and we're in this, you know, unpaved street, water everywhere, it's snowing. The water is not potable from the wells in some cases. There's no indoor plumbing. Everybody was heating with firewood.
Yeah.
So you're sitting there, and as a community organizer, you're literally, without even talking to anybody, you're looking at, you know, 25 different problems and campaigns. And there was an abandoned house, a two-story house, near this sort of stretch of where maybe 15 or 20 families lived in the Roma community. And so what the organizers wanted to talk about is they thought maybe they could buy that house for 12,000 euros and make it a community center. And you're saying, you know, you're just, you're biting your lip because, you know, it's sort of like, is that what people are coming to demand for you to help them do, is get a community center? And it's just sort of crazy. But
yeah.
So we're talking to Dave Beck at the University of Glasgow, who's also got a lot of experience in community development and wrote a book with others not long ago about this subject and community organizing. You mentioned the Radical Learning Network.
Yeah.
What are you trying to do with that, you and your compadres?
Well, I suppose one of the opportunity that exists in Scotland is it's small. There's only like 5 million of us, 5.5 million.
About the size of the whole Slovakian population.
there's not many people there. Small place. And so you think the opportunity for us to have a real impact on power, on government, on social fabric is massive. But one of the things that I've observed is things are very fragmented. And so part of the thinking behind the Radical Learning Network is to link up academics, practitioners, students, activists in some sort of network where we can think together, act together, and kind of be some sort of support for a movement for social change.
I assume for pilot projects of some kind, new kinds of way of thinking
stuff,
about it.
One of the threads that we're developing is exploring interesting forms of practice. And so my kind of vision is that, you know, people will just kind of get together and go off and do stuff and, you know, trial different approaches and see if we can find ways that work, ways that have an impact within communities. So at this stage, early stage, but there's some quite exciting
And so, when did y'all launch the Radical Learning Network? It wasn't that long ago.
No,
I think I did it.
Yeah, just before Christmas, really,
a year
was
ago
when it started. And so, there's probably about 400 or so people involved in some sort of way.
Just before Christmas, 2016, 2017.
No, Christmas had just passed.
But there was some website thing y'all were doing that was before that.
Well, we've had the Radical Community Work Journal. Which
okay,
is,
I'm getting the two confused. Exactly. Okay.
So we started, I knew it had radical in the name. Whatever we do, we put the word radical.
Yeah, no, it sounds like that's your brand.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's your brand.
We want to copyright radical stuff.
Yeah, no, it used to be it was common. Now it's more, okay, that's a Scottish thing, radical.
Feels a bit edgy.
Yeah, there you go, it is.
Yeah, so we've got the Radical Community Work Journal that's been running for a couple of years.
Yeah, that's what I did the piece for, right?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
And so the Radical Learning Network probably combines some of those people, but 400 people in the last 3 months? That's, and mainly in Scotland, I assume?
It's primarily in Scotland. I mean, I think it's good because we want it to be practical. We want it to be connected, you know, physically connected. It's going to be mainly about Scotland. But we certainly want to link up to influential thinkers like yourself.
Oh, there you go. Whatever. I'm going to be one of the most interesting people in the world in a minute.
Exactly.
I'm going to have to interview myself.
So that we can broaden our horizons, because one of the difficulties, I think, in any practice is you kind of get into a way of doing things and a way of understanding things, and the discourse is framed in a particular way, and you need to have perspectives from other places to kind of fracture that a little bit so that you can come up with new ideas and new ways of work.
Now, you've been to the United States. I mean, a lot of what you describe sounds like what used to be and still is, in some cases, the program in sort of social work schools, where you get a master's of social work. They do practicums. They do, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Many of them end up in these same, that's where they go if they want to end up as working for the United Way or working for youth centers. So are there separate social work schools in Scotland and the UK, or would this be that kind of program?
No, there are. Social work is very different within our context.
Okay.
It's much more individualistic, individually focused.
Casework.
It's casework. Okay. They do very little group work. Used to, maybe 20 years ago, there were community workers in social work, but that has kind of gone.
Well, now, you know, and that's that same phenomenon has happened in the U.S. Yeah. In schools of social work. It used to be community organizing. Yeah. Was a, if you look back in the 1970s or late 60s, was a central part of the program in the University of Michigan school or in, you know, and a lot of social work schools hardly offer, I mean, a course or two, but don't really offer a practicum in community organizing. Yeah, they do it at, you know, Boston University, Georgia State University, I can almost name the number, you know, because I end up getting invited to, you know, visit with some of those. But so how do you see the future of all these things? I mean, as you're optimistic.
Always optimistic, yeah. And I think
we've got evidence to support it.
Some evidence to support it.
Some evidence to support. Well, we had an interesting group yesterday that was clearly interested in these kinds of topics last night.
Well, I think that's what gives me optimism. I mean, there's clearly, we're in a time where the state's rolling back. You know, there's major issues around poverty. And you know, the polarization within society, all of that is the kind of backdrop. But people's response to that is, let's do something, you know. And you see that across, you know, there's groups of artists in Glasgow who are trying to use art to develop critical thinking and develop new ways of working. You've got people in.
And how do they? Is that a job or just an avocation?
Well, it's I think a mixture of both. People are kind of, you know, ducking and diving and trying to, you know, build something together. But there's a real heart to do something that's different, something that makes a change. So you see that across arts, you see it across foods and the environment. You see it in youth work, in health, in all sorts of ways where people are thinking, there's something that's kind of fundamentally wrong, but we want to try and find ways to make a difference. And so long as that's happening, you've got to be optimistic.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. And some people, I mean, I sat next to somebody yesterday after the thing who'd been an engineer and was deciding she wanted to work with young people. And so that's a pretty big career change
Go from. So people are prepared to make sacrifices to do something that's different. That's
because I assume community development is probably not the highest paid career opportunity here any more than community organizing is in the United States.
You don't come into it for the money or the glory.
That's right.
Or the glamour.
Well, you know, when I used to interview people back, you know, over the years, I'd say, well, you know, if you want this job, you better call your mother and tell her you'll never be president. And then all of a sudden, you know, Obama, you know, so I have to change that rap. Now, you know, it turns out that's just the one that proves the rule. Now I have to adjust that sentence, you know, and then I have to say, and he wasn't a very good organizer anyway. So, you know, you have a future, just not as president, perhaps. Yeah. So, Dave, how do people, if people wanted to learn more about this program and the Radical Learning Network and some of the other projects you and your folks are involved in, is there a way they can get in, find out more material, a website, contact information? What can you offer people here from foreign shores and wherever?
Well, if people are on Facebook, if you look for the Radical Learning Network, you'll find a Facebook page.
And just to repeat that in English, that's Radical. Now, that's a joke. We haven't had a single language joke yet until the very end. That's Radical Learning Network, LEARNING Network, at Facebook,
Facebook. Yeah, we're on Facebook. You could email me directly at dave.beck@glasgow.ac.uk.
Okay, that's Dave Beck. Dave.beck. Yeah, put the period in there. B-E-C-K at Glasgow.ac. What does the AC stand for?
Academic.
Okay, AC is, and then UK.
Dot UK.
Dot UK. And Dave, I know you and Brother Purcell are working on another book here.
Yeah.
I heard the pressure is on, but what's that going to be about? Tell that for 10 seconds before we leave.
10 seconds. It's community development and social change. What do you need to know?
We already like it. You now know how to find out. The Radical Learning Network and Dave Beck, and we'll keep up with him and see what happens. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen and will never forget. As the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week when we'll have another guest, this is Wade Rathke from Wade's World.